Support comes from the Will Geer Theatricum Botanicum in Topanga, presenting a new musical play by Peter Alsop, Ebenezer's Makeover, for Topanga Disaster Relief and LGBTQ+ Awareness. It runs two nights only on Friday, May 9th and Saturday, May 10th at 7:30 p.m. at the Will Geer Theatricum Botanicum. Further information is available at theatricum.com.
Hi, I'm Danny Glover, and you're listening to Fiercely Independent KPFK 90.7 FM in Los Angeles, 98.7 FM in Santa Barbara, and worldwide at kpfk.org. Radio powered by the people.
Get up, stand up, stand up for your right. Get up, stand up, stand up for your right. Get up, stand up, stand up for your right. Get up, stand up, don't give up the fight.
Preacher man, don't tell me.
And welcome to this week's edition of the Lawyers Guild Show. I'm Jim Lafferty, along with my co-host, Maria Hall. Good afternoon, Maria.
Good afternoon, Jim.
Good to see you. Good to see you. Good to hear from you. Let our listeners know what's in store for them today.
Yes. Well, in our first segment, we'll speak with Elena Pop about how Eviction Defense Network and other tenant advocates are giving up power to the people in court, whether or not they have lawyers. Then in our second half hour, we'll hear from our resident constitutional law scholar, Stephen Rohde, about the latest federal court decisions that are not in Donald Trump's favor.
Yeah, and they do keep coming. Well, this is also, of course, we're still in our spring fun drive for a little bit more. Let me remind our listeners what the story is with that. We don't spend 20 minutes of every hour. We don't spend a half an hour. We don't spend 10 minutes, really. We spend maybe, 5, 6, 7 minutes, maybe for the whole hour, reminding you that we need you to be a part of this because you are. We don't get government money. Hell, none of the public radio stations are going to be getting public money for that matter. Woe is be for them. We depend on you, our listeners. We really are a community radio station. Without your support, we wouldn't be on the air. You wouldn't be driving in your car or sitting in your home listening to us today, except for people just like you. Well, that means we're all in it together, my friends, and we need you now as much as ever. We probably need you more than ever because prices keep going up on our electric bills and everything else here at KPFK. So please remember that we are that funder. Chances are you've been saying, yeah, I've been meaning to call in and just haven't done it yet, perhaps. The number is easy. It's 818-985-5735. Choose option 2. Somebody will get on the phone with you right away. Take your pledge of 50 or 100 or $500, whatever your pledge is going to be, $25, you're a full-fledged member. And offer you a number of ways in which we say thank you when you do that. Quickly, what are a couple of those ways before we get started, Maria?
Sure. Well, one book that I saw that I am going to get is called We Are the Union, How Worker-to-Worker Organizing is Revitalizing Labor and Winning Big. And it's actually a thank you gift for a pledge of $125 or more on the KPFK website. You can see it. Excellent. And it's by author Eric Blanc, who I happened to interview on another show in December. And he is fabulous. And the book describes the labor movement's bottom-up resurgence, where individual workers are recruiting one another through social media and other digital ways too. And his book provides a roadmap for workers, unions, and social movements. So I highly recommend the book, and it's available for a pledge of $125 or more.
And we're going to need that kind of thinking more and more in these period ahead. We need it right today. Well, all right. And we'll come back with you during the show to tell you some more ways we say thank you. We want you to say thank you to us, though, please, to start it off. It starts with you, and then we say thank you after you say thank you, is I guess the way it works. A little strange, but you give us a call at 818-985-5735. Choose option two, make your pledge, select the gift that you'd like to have by way of a thank you gift for your pledge, and that way we can keep doing what we're now going to start doing. So let me now introduce, without further ado, our guest for this topic. Well, you know, in Los Angeles County, there's at least 47,000 tenants every year who are renters, you know, who face evictions. It's not hard to understand why this is so, of course. California is now, think about it, the fourth largest economy in the world, and LA is the richest state in the union. But it has the highest poverty rate of any state. Why is that? Why is that strange situation abide? Simply the cost of housing. In recent years in LA County, measures pledging billions of dollars for low-cost housing have passed, but where's the housing? So let's talk about evictions. And our guest for it couldn't be a better guest for this topic. She's attorney Elena Popp. Now, Elena Popp is the executive director of the marvelous Eviction Defense Network, a critically needed resource center for anyone facing eviction. Let me simply add that, well, I've known Elena Popp for many, many years now. I've watched her work and say without fear of contradiction that she is simply one of the great champions for those facing evictions in Los Angeles County today. So, Elena Popp, welcome to the Lawyers Guild show.
Well, she's actually not on the Zoom.
Oh, dear. Okay. Well, hopefully she'll join us quickly. The Eviction Defense Center has a vast array of programs. We're going to ask her about some of those programs. We'll give us a summary of all the different work that they do. It's hard to keep up with. They keep adding to the things they do, the technology that helps them do it. There have been, of course, in the past, as we know, periods of reprieval when during the pandemic, there was a stay of rents because people were out of work, people had no money. So the city, the county gave them a pass on paying their rent, an abatement, but it didn't cancel the rent. It didn't necessarily cancel the rent, did it? How they were expected to be able to pay all of their rent when it finally was going to become due is a mystery to me. So many people have a hard time just paying their rent 1 month at a time. And of course, as I say, rents in Los Angeles County are themselves so terribly high. You know, they talk about what portion of your annual income every year you should not exceed by way of your rent portion. And yet in LA and in California itself in general, that is simply not abided by. People are paying, you know, over half what they earn every year in rent. Well, we're getting Elena on the phone, are we?
She is. Yes, I'm in process of trying to do that.
All right. Well, that's good. In the meanwhile, let me remind people while we're waiting for Elena to join us that this is still the KPFK fund drive, and we won't have to interrupt our show then later if we do it now. So why don't you give us a call at 818-985-5735. I know Maria, oh, I must have the world's largest collection of cups and mugs, right?
And tote bags.
I know, you could probably open up your own kiosk.
I love the KPFK tote bags. They're a nice gray color and it has the logo and yeah. It's a great talking point, you know, at the grocery store. You can find out who's on your side, if you know what I mean.
And it is a way to advertise the station, and that's good because we can't afford advertising. You know, a lot of other stations you will see advertised. They'll have a billboard around town, some of the big AM stations, and that's something we're not able to do. And when you get a mug and somebody comes over to your house for dinner, or as Maria's just said, if you've got a tote bag in the store, and somebody might say, KPFK, what's that? If they haven't already heard of us, and you can tell them it's the People's Station. It's a station that is not beholden to a corporate sponsorship. Archer Daniels Midland and such do not sponsor any program or underwrite any program here. The only underwriters we have of our programs here at KPFK, my friends, are you. You are our only underwriters because you contribute generously. That's what's kept this for generation after generation, decade after decade. That's what's kept this program on the air. because it is alternative radio. It is radio that is not beholden to the oligarchies that run this country. You know, there's only about six major corporations now that own the media in this country. They don't own us, and we want to keep it that way. There's precious little left of what we do on the air. You can drive all around this country, and except for places where you can hear public radio, and even public radio, as I just suggested, because they take corporate underwriting, isn't really commercial free. They just don't call it commercials. We are commercial free. We're influenced only by what we ourselves wish to do, and which you support by contributing your dollars to us during these pledge drives. And you know, the other point that I always make during these times is that because we are a humanist progressive radio station, when we do our programming, our public affairs programming, and this is hardly the only public affairs show on KPFK, we're providing a service for the progressive movement here in Los Angeles, the humanistic, the progressive movement, the movement that looks for peace and an end to racism, an end to the destruction of our environment, an end to wars and what have you. We bring on the organizers from those organizations that are working to bring about peace and harmony in our society and in our world. They get a chance to be heard. They're not heard on the mainstream corporate radios, or if so, maybe they're on for 30 seconds or a minute and a half, little sound bite from some press conference. We interview them at, you know, at half hour chunks here, as do other programs at KPFK. So when you contribute to KPFK, you're contributing as well to that whole humanistic progressive movement of harmony and peace and racial justice, and that is so vitally important this day. And of course, with Trump in the White House, is so lacking in the government itself. So please do give us a call at 818-985-5735. That's 818-985-5735. And let us know that you do, therefore, support the station, support what we've been doing and doing day in and day out. When you give us a call at 818-985-5735, you select option two. And that way you'll get right to somebody. It'll take you a minute to do it. You'll feel better. I always do. I mean, nobody says they like to part with money. Well, listen, you pay for your newspaper. You pay for your streaming services you get on your TV. You pay for your radio station because you're listening to all those damn commercials. Here you don't do any of that. So we think it's a bargain. You can, as I say, for as little as $25, be a full-fledged member. You'll feel better. It's a broader family, a bigger family. And the bigger we get, the more influence we get, the more people we reach with our message. And we think that's a very wholesome sign. Maria, any other gifts that you think people ought to know about?
Sure. I mean, yeah, if you just go on kpfk.org, there's so many fun things to look at. Everything from Grateful Dead music to books. Like I said, I really can't wait to read the one that I was mentioning about We Are the Union. What is the subtitle? We Are the Union, How Worker-to-Worker Organizing is Revitalizing Labor and Winning Big. And this is really an exciting book and topic. I did interview Eric Blanc, the author, last year, and it's really shows the power of the people. And I know KPFK listeners were kind of preaching to the choir, but we need to preach to the choir, right? We need to motivate each other and, you know, help each other get up and stand up for our rights, as the song says. So well, I really like that book. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Well, you make a good point, because this is an organizing tool. But I mean, every radio station should be an organizing tool. And to some extent, I suppose all of them are. To the extent that you turn on, you hear the evening news, something makes you mad, and you decide something about it, join a group that's doing something about it. But the difference is that here, you're getting it unfiltered from the people who are doing the kind of work that so many of our listeners like, so many of our listeners approve of.
Yeah.
This is a community that is, by and large, is a community of people who have been fighting racism, fighting for a better environment to protect the wonderful climates and what have you that's disappearing all too quickly here in Los Angeles, fighting for the kinds of rights of our brothers and sisters who are facing now deportation.
Yeah.
perhaps without even any due process, since Trump suggests that maybe due process is not necessary if you're doing that, as though you can pick and choose when the Fifth Amendment to the Constitution doesn't apply.
Yeah, he says, I'm not a lawyer. I don't know.
Yeah. No, yeah.
Like, come on, dude.
Well,
Ignorance of the law is no excuse.
No.
Jim, I have a question for you, Jim, since we have some time. So listeners probably aren't aware that you and I go way back, and you even helped me apply for law school back in the year 1999.
Oh, my goodness.
And one of the things that we talked about, and this is a question from me as interviewer to you as a long, long time activist, it was something that you had told me about the difference between being an organizer and being a lawyer, and how there's something called movement lawyering.
Yeah.
But that's kind of a shifting target. And as even we're living every historical moment and how things have changed since 1999, for example. But I think I've been grappling. I think listeners would want to know your impressions of what is this moment and where are we going? You know, how do we understand what we're doing? And I have faith that we're all, as long as we all stand up every day with courage and face what's happening and stick true, you know, stick to the truth, stick to reality. Don't let people intimidate us into believing things that aren't true. You know, treating people as an end, not as a means to an end, and basically not exploiting others and not being exploited. Like, how do we do that in this day and age?
Well, I think you make a good point, because look what's happened to some of the major law firms in the country.
Mm-hmm.
And these weren't necessarily, these are largely corporate law firms, most of them. They're not the kind of legal outfit that our hoped for guest today, Elena Popp, runs through the Eviction Defense Network and such. They're not like the National Lawyers Guild. They're not like the Black Bar Association, et cetera, et cetera. And even they, because they dared to have some of their lawyers represent some causes that were met with disapproval from President Trump, were subject to attack. And sad to say, a lot of them caved. A lot of them gave up and caved and agreed to provide millions and millions of dollars of free legal services to the Trump administration so that he would get off their back. Well, the fact of the matter is they have a good lawsuit. And as you'll hear in our next segment, in fact, today, when we have on Brother Rohde, you'll hear about one of the major big law firms in the country that is fighting back and fighting back successfully. I think it's a winning case for lawsuits that they hadn't just caved in. But your question more specifically about movement lawyering is simply that if you're a lawyer for the movement, you take your cue from the organizational groups that you're representing. You don't assume you know more about what is needed for peace and for racial harmony than the group you're representing. Now, you may know more about the law than they do, and it's your job certainly to inform them of what the law is, but you have to let your clients lead you. In a typical lawyer representing a bank, they don't do that. They say, here, listen, I'm your lawyer for the bank, and this is what the law is, and this is what you must do, and you will start doing this tomorrow. Well, sometimes, though, even though that may be the legal advice you want to give a group that is protesting, oh, deportations or something, they may have political reasons for wanting to do it differently. They may even want to challenge the law. They may want to confront the law. They may want to engage in civil disobedience, at which point it's your job to still represent them. Simply let them know what the various problems can be with civil disobedience, which one they want to pick, help them select it and do it. It's a different kind of lawyering. It's people-centered, it's movement-centered, it's client-centered lawyering, as opposed to lawyer-centered lawyering. Well, it looks like we're finally joined by Elena Popp. Elena, good
Sorry
afternoon.
Sorry about that, guys.
Yeah, well, good we afternoon. Are too. So let's try to make as much use as we can of the time we have left, my dear. We already have introduced you and the wonderful work that the Eviction Defense Network does. But I wonder if you might, and as cryptically as you can and yet do its service, in broad strokes, what are the challenges that the Eviction Defense Network is meant to address? And have those challenges changed over the last 20 years? Is it a different day now for somebody who's being evicted than they were then? And in any event, what kind of services do you provide for people facing eviction?
Definitely a different day. 20 years ago, the problem was that we did not have money to hire lawyers. And I would say often the government is never going to give us enough money to represent the 70,000 people that are being evicted. And so we started a sliding fee scale program. Now?
Yes.
Now we have funding from both the city and the county. And the problem is that we can't find lawyers to fill those positions. So we need to really attract lawyers and make sure lawyers know how important it is to stop gentrification, to protect people's housing, to help people with evictions.
But doesn't the Eviction Defense Network itself provide some of that?
Well, we do, but I had six positions open for over a year.
Oh my!
I could not find lawyers to fix them,
oh
to
my,
fill them.
Oh my goodness!
Yeah,
Maria, I'm sorry.
So,
I'm sorry, Maria.
So,
no.
Oh, go ahead, Lee.
Go ahead. Please, Maria, go ahead with your next question.
Oh, okay. Well, yeah, I was going to follow up on that because I know there are some right to counsel efforts, as you were saying, that there is money. There are some challenges to finding lawyers, whether that be because, I mean, Elena, we know it is hard work. I know because I learned it a little bit from you. I worked with you for a little while and it is hard, but it makes you an amazing advocate when you can get into eviction court. I mean, isn't that right? Because I work with young lawyers, as you know, and I always try to get them to do it. I don't know if it's because they're scared or what, but give us your best 30-second pitch for why you're a law student or lawyer, why you should do it. Because, yeah.
It is a great training ground. It gets you into jury trials so quickly in your career. And doing it at Eden is a super, super great training ground because we put a lot of energy into training young lawyers to be good eviction defense lawyers, good litigators, and good lawyers that can present a case to a jury. Mm-hmm. The status of right to counsel is that we have laws that say that landlords have to give certain notices, landlords have to do specific things in order to proceed. So we've created some defenses to evictions. However, there is not a civil Gideon. There's no law that says no lawyer, no trial, the way that there is in the criminal context. Wow. We need to get there. We need to get there. But right now what we have is funding and some noticing requirements about people's rights to a lawyer, not a actual right to a lawyer right now. But the coalition is working on it.
All right. We have, again, sadly, because of the your emergency that came up, we have just about 7 minutes left for this. And I note you called it to my attention, in fact, that the Stanford University released a report entitled A Blueprint for Expanding Access to Justice in Los Angeles Superior Court's Eviction Docket. And the report issues a number of recommendations. I wonder if you can summarize the main takeaways from that and whether you agree with any of those recommendations or not.
Yeah, so we were part of the report. The report focuses on how busy the court is, how in Spanish we say estancada. Basically, there's a clog in the system that it is taking many, many, many months and in some cases years to get eviction cases through the system. It also focuses on how difficult it is for litigants to understand what's happening in the system. And those are all valid concerns. But in fact, the main problem that we have is that there are not enough lawyers to represent the 47,000 litigants that are going through the system. And the report really didn't focus enough on that, even though we were part of the focus groups and gave them a lot of information about what we are doing, why we created the Tenant Empowerment Program, and we created it because of the lack of lawyers. So maybe I can talk a little bit about that.
Yes.
Yes, please. That was going to be my next
So,
question because I know about it, but I would love the world to know about it.
yeah. You know, we started it in January of 2023. And the reason we started is that the Right to Counsel Coalition had decided to focus on, at the time, I think it was 20 priority zip codes out of the 321 zip codes in the county. And I couldn't stomach the thought that so many people would have absolutely no chance of getting any help. So we beefed up our online workshops. And the more we did them, the more we added to them, the more people started volunteering. And over time, they started taking ownership over the workshops. And as they started taking ownership over the workshops, I realized they started a support group on Friday nights. We gave them the Zoom. And so tenants would be at the support group, and people started volunteering. And the result of that was something called the Tenant Empowerment Program. When we gave it a name, it took on a life of its own. And what the program does is it uses videos and workshops. There's a video and a workshop for every important part of the process and the support group. And then also social events. Like all summer long last summer, we went to Dance DTLA together. It's a stress reliever and it's a way for people to bond. And then once they start bonding, they provide court support to each other. So people are not alone in court when we can't send a lawyer. And as a result of all of that, the program has really taken on a life of its own. We have people who came into the program as victims of evictions and are now working for Eden. 39% of our staff are graduates of the EDN Tenant Empowerment Program, people with fire in the belly for the work and just the willingness to really go all out.
That's
Some are going into home ownership as a result of getting, saving the rent and getting relocation assistance. And so the program is really changing people's lives and changing how people look at how they operate in the world. Instead of being victims, they become actors. And that is really, just such a benefit. When I first started the program, I would be apologetic that we didn't have a lawyer for everyone. Now I realize that getting folks to prepare their own cases for trial gives them so much power and control over this very important part of their lives that they can then use those lessons elsewhere. And we, in fact, do step into 95% of the cases. If folks have prepared their case, each of our lawyers can handle way more. Like the standard in eviction defense world is that each lawyer can handle between 50 and 125 cases a year. Our lawyers last year did an average of 299 cases per lawyer.
Amazing.
And it's because the students prepare their own work, and then at the point at which an actual judge is assigned, if a lawyer is available, we step in, and we manage to do that 95% of the time, representing an empowered person who knows their case and is kind of sitting next to you as a co-counsel. And at first, the judges hated it, right? Because it's not very lawyerly. And they also hate that we parachute in as soon as a lawyer is available. Maybe they'd already started. I've stepped in as late as at the start of the defense case. And the law judges hate it, but there's nothing to say we can't, quote, parachute in, and it's having great success. So
Redefines what's meant by movement lawyering. I mean, we were talking about that before you were able to join us, Maria and I, how movement lawyering is different than classical lawyering. And you're certainly giving an amazing example of that with the Eviction Defense Network. My goodness. If people want to know more about the work that you do and how it might be of help to them, do they simply go online or let our
Yes.
listeners know how they might get in touch with your various programs?
The first thing I want to do is go to E for eviction, D for defense, N for network dot LA forward slash videos. EDN dot LA forward slash videos. And watch the first three videos on the website. It explains the program in great detail. And then you, like the first video is 14 minutes. Watch the first three.
Then come to our BATEP Pro class. They are on Mondays at 4, Wednesdays at 4, Saturdays at 8. And there we provide further explanation of how the program works. And after that, watch the videos come to class, watch the videos come to class, watch the videos come to class, watch the videos till you can teach the class, and then keep watching the videos and keep coming to class because things change. And because we're teaching you how to be a lawyer, many of our TEP students know more than I did when I graduated from law school about doing a trial. And that's because they watch the videos and come to class.
Well, and the binders.
Oh, and the binders. We also, at intake, we are now known as the people with the orange binders. I recently had this interaction with Judge Riff, who was asking me how I'm doing. And I told him, well, very busy trying to close this access to justice gap on the sixth floor. And his response was, ah, the people with the orange binders. So the court is very aware of our TEP students. They carry orange binders, which are their trial binders with all their trial documents and all their evidence. We help them put those binders together at intake and then at what we call step 10 and step 15, which are two of the steps in the 18 steps to victory. And you can get a copy of the 18 steps to victory at edn.la on the TEP Google Drive.
Yeah, edn.la/videos is another way to go and watch some of those videos. Well, it's an amazing program. It's changed the very nature of eviction defense work in probably the country, but certainly here in LA. And it's a credit to you and to all the wonderful people who work with you. So Elena Popp, thank you. Thank you not only for what you do, but thank you for joining us here on the Lawyers Guild Show today to explain it to our audience. Audience, don't go in alone. Check these folks out. Get any help that you can get. Thanks, Elena.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
We'll now have a brief station identification break, folks, and we'll be right back with you.
You're listening to KPFK 90.7 FM Los Angeles, 98.7 FM Santa Barbara County, and across the globe at kpfk.org. Pacifica Radio for all the surfing, California and beyond.
And we are back here, as I say, in a short station ID break. You're listening to the Lawyers Guild Show. I'm Jim Lafferty, along with co-host Maria Hall. And now, in the second half hour, we're going to be checking up on how Trump is doing in the courts. It's a mixed bag, but he hasn't been doing very well, certainly not at least in the lower courts. And you'll get a report on that just in a second. Let me just quickly remind you, this is still our spring fund drive. If you haven't given us a call yet, it takes you about a minute to do it. You want to give us a call at 818-985-5735, choose option 2, make your pledge, $50, $25, whatever it might be. If you're listening to the station, if you're a regular listener to the station, it must be important to you. You must appreciate how unique this station is. There really is nothing like Pacifica in the country except Pacifica, and we want to keep it that way, and it's harder and harder to do it with the rising cost of electricity and everything else. Our staff doesn't get the kind of salaries they should get, but they're dedicated to the station. We hope you are too. That's why we want you to call us when we have our fund drives. Make whatever contribution you have to make sure this kind of non-corporate influence programming continues to come to you, continues to serve the people of Los Angeles, not the corporations, not the corporate broadcasters. 818-985-5735. And now, I should tell you that something unusual. The rest of the program today is been pre-recorded. That isn't usually the case, but we have on every couple of weeks Steve Rohde, who you will hear introduced again in a second. But Steve had to be going out of town today, so we pre-recorded his interview to bring you up to date on all these cases. Let's play that interview now, folks.
The courts continue to operate as the only check on Trump's autocratic executive orders. Since our last review of how Trump's edicts have been faring in the courts, several courts have ruled against Trump's actions on the deportation of those Trump finds objectionable. And one of the country's major law firms has successfully sued the Trump administration over his order seeking to deny court access to those firms whose lawyers have represented causes of which Trump disapproves. All of this, as last Sunday, during an NBC Meet the Press interview, Trump said he did not know if it was his job to uphold the Constitution. Can you imagine? And wavered when asked if every person on American soil was entitled to due process, even though the Fifth Amendment says exactly that. Well, to bring us up to date on how Trump is faring in the courts, our guest, of course, when we do these shows regularly, is Stephen Rohde. Now, Mr. Rohde is a constitutional scholar, writer, lecturer, and political activist. He's the past chair of the ACLU Foundation of Southern California, the past national chair of Bend the Arc, a Jewish partnership for justice. He is a founder and chair of Interfaith Communities United for Justice and Peace, and now a special advisor on free speech and the First Amendment for the Muslim Public Affairs Council. Of course, Mr. Rohde is speaking only for himself today. Steve Rohde, a warm welcome back to the Lawyers Guild show.
Thank you so much, Jim and Maria. It's a pleasure again to be with you.
Steve, a federal judge in Texas has now permanently barred the Trump administration from invoking the old Alien Enemies Act, an 18th century wartime law, to deport those Venezuelans that is deemed to be criminals, saying that Trump's use of the statute was illegal. How important is this case?
This case is very important, Jim. Literally, it may be the most important trial court decision we have had during these over first 100 days of Trump's second term. And it's very important for the audience to understand this case. On May 1st, District Judge Fernando Rodriguez Jr., whom Trump himself appointed during his first term, permanently enjoined the federal government from using the Alien Enemies Act to expel Venezuelan alleged gang members. In 1798, the Alien Enemies Act was passed by Congress, signed by President John Adams, on anticipation of war with France. It said specifically that if there was a war declared between the U.S. and a foreign country, or any invasion or predatory incursion by a foreign nation or government, then the president could order members of that country to be apprehended, restrained, secured, and removed as alien enemies. And back on March 15, Trump issued a proclamation to that effect, claiming that the gang Tren de Aragua, TDA as it's known, was functioning as part of the Venezuelan government. That was his hook to make it a foreign invasion or predatory incursion. It was solely on the basis of that law that he shipped those men to El Salvador and all of the havoc that has been wreaked. Well, Judge Rodriguez did a thorough analysis of this law. It was a very modest opinion. There was no flowery language. It was just an analysis of the law. He found that three presidents have used the AEA, President James Madison during the War of 1812, Woodrow Wilson in the First World War, and FDR in the Second World War. And he very carefully looked historically at the language in the Alien Enemies Act. The plain language of the word invasion or incursion. He also specifically held that the Supreme Court precedent says that courts have the power to determine based on the facts whether the law applies. And finally, he came to the important conclusion that Trump's proclamation makes no reference, has no factual basis, that a threat exists of an organized, armed group of individuals entering the United States at the direction of the country of Venezuela to conquer our country or assume control over a portion of it, and similarly no basis for an invasion or a predatory incursion. He clearly held that Trump has exceeded the scope of the statute and is unlawful. And he granted a permanent injunction preventing the government from relying on this statute. I've got to say this was a good day for our constitutional democracy. There's no question Trump will appeal to the conservative Fifth Circuit and eventually the arch-conservative Supreme Court. But this Rodriguez opinion, well-reasoned, 36 pages long, if justice still prevails in this country, his historic ruling will be upheld and the rule of law will survive at least one of Trump's most serious threats.
Well, Steve, Trump suffered another court defeat in his effort to force some of the country's major law firms into doing his bidding. The law firm Perkins Coie secured a ruling in federal court last Friday, permanently barring Trump from enforcing an order to punish law firms he opposes politically. Talk to us about this case and its importance.
Another major defeat for Trump and a victory for the rule of law. This was one of those immensely dangerous executive orders against law firms, preventing them from having access to federal courts, dictating the choice of their clients, etc. Perkins Coie had represented Hillary Clinton in the 2016 presidential race and in voting rights litigation against Trump, and Trump targeted them for exactly that. On May 2nd, as you say, under a motion for summary judgment, Judge Beryl Howell wrote a 102-page opinion with a 5-page order finding that Trump had violated the First, Fifth, and Sixth Amendments, that the order was null and void. She granted a permanent injunction and rescinded all of his orders that have flowed from this. She grounded it in due process, in interfering with the right to choose counsel. She said that Trump's executive order, quote, was a blunt exercise of power that is not a legitimate use of the powers of the U.S. government or an American president. She added that government officials, including the president, may not subject individuals to retaliatory actions after the fact for having engaged in protected free speech. This is the first ruling to strike down an executive order on the merits. Other judges have issued TROs, and in this case, granting permanent relief. This is a major victory. I'm proud of this one and a few other law firms for standing up. I'm ashamed of the law firms that have capitulated. This case, of course, will go up through the courts, but the grounding and the legal analysis, I believe, is unassailable.
Absolutely, it would seem so. Steve, talk to us about the case of Columbia student Moishen Mathdawi and the case of Tufts student Rumaysa Ozturk, both outspoken advocates for the Palestinian cause who the government has sought to deport.
Here again, the law is speaking up. The outrage that ICE and the FBI arrested Moishen Mathdawi, a lawful permanent resident, but Judge Jeffrey Crawford in Vermont on April 30 said that legal residents not charged with crimes or misconduct are being arrested and threatened with deportation for stating their views on the political issues of the day. He likened it to the Red Scare and the McCarthy era. This man spent 2 weeks in detention, but it was Judge Crawford's order to release him. Mathdawi was released. He stood before the courthouse and the cameras. Such a courageous man. He said, "I am saying it clear and loud to President Trump and his cabinet. I am not afraid of you." His separate immigration case is pending. He's only out on bail, and we'll have to follow that case closely. But that early ruling is important. Miss Öztürk, a 30-year-old, a tough student, in March, he was absconded off the street in Boston, in the suburbs. She was driven first to New Hampshire, then Vermont, and then transferred to a detention center in Louisiana, and all because she wrote an op-ed in the Tufts Daily newspaper demanding that Tufts acknowledge Palestinian genocide, disclose its investments, and divest from companies with ties to Israel. This judge has ordered Öztürk to be transferred to Vermont for hearings on May 9, a bail hearing. That was Judge William Sessions. And now that was stayed by the Second Circuit, but again, procedurally, so that a three-judge panel could hear arguments on Tuesday, May 6. But she spent 5 weeks in detention. That case continues. It's an outrage to due process and to freedom of speech.
Steve, Harvard has sued the Trump administration over its attempt to interfere in how it educates its students. But now two separate Harvard task forces have released scathing accounts of how the university has dealt with both anti-Semitism and bias against Muslim, Arab, and Palestinian students in terms of coursework, social life, the hiring of faculty members, and the worldview of certain academic programs. What did these reports reveal, and will they have any impact on Harvard's lawsuit against the Trump administration?
Yes, this is two parts to the Harvard story. I applaud Harvard for having stood up to Trump. That contrasts with Columbia University, my alma mater at law school. I'm ashamed of Columbia for capitulating. Harvard, on the other hand, has stood up. In April, they filed a 51-page lawsuit. They cited the fact that Trump's executive order and the follow-up orders of his minions violated the First Amendment, violated Title VI of the Civil Rights Act of 1964, and it was ambiguous and capricious. Judge Allison Burroughs, an Obama administration appointee, was chosen at random, although it wasn't quite random. Courts can, we used to call it a low number, the judges in federal court, because Judge Burroughs is also sitting in a separate case that involves Harvard. And so the case went to her. Now, interestingly, Harvard did not ask for a TRO. So the freeze on $22 billion of federal grants remains in effect, but Harvard asked for an expedited hearing instead of a TRO, and that's been set for July 21st, giving all sides an opportunity to fully brief and argue the case. I think the lawyers in these cases are trying to get to final judgments and permanent injunctions. The same kind of fund freezing went on at Princeton, Cornell, and NYU. Now, meanwhile, and there is a silver lining in this piece of the story, on April 29, President Alan Garber of Harvard released two reports. One was a task force on combating anti-Semitism, and the other was a task force on combating anti-Muslim, anti-Arab, and anti-Palestinian bias on that campus. Together, these reports total 500 pages of interviews and documentation. Now, what's important is the courage of Harvard itself to release reports in the midst of what the Trump administration is doing. because both of these reports document serious prejudice and lack of enforcement of Harvard's policies. But at least in this case, unlike so many other universities, which were so one-sided in their analysis and only looked at anti-Semitism, the Harvard reports looked at all of the forms of anti-Semitism and Islamophobia. People should go and consult those reports. For example, it found that 56% of Muslim students do not feel safe on that campus, and 26% of Jewish students don't feel safe. But what it means is a university is tackling its own problems. That's the essence of academic freedom, independence from outside influences, especially government influences. I think that's healthy. I think Harvard is demonstrating it can deal with its own problems faithfully and effectively internally. And I'm also glad that the Harvard Crimson student newspaper emphasized that we must protect free speech and foster empathy toward our peers to promote a positive and engaged student climate.
Steve, all of this calls to mind a recent article in the New York Times by Amanda Taub, an article that is entitled "The Frightening Precedents for Trump's quote-unquote legal abyss." Now, in it, she writes about what is known as the dual state theory. That's a theory that explains how authoritarians bend the law to their will and how in an authoritarian state, there can be one law for regular citizens and another for those deemed enemies of the state. For example, that was the case in Nazi Germany. Is that what is developing in the United States today, do you think?
We are on an arc in that direction. We haven't reached it yet, and that's why I believe warnings and lessons need to be learned. It's why programs like the one you're holding and have held and will continue to hold are crucial. The dual state theory was actually developed by a German Jewish lawyer, Ernest Frankel, in the 1930s. He saw what was going on around him. He did escape from Nazi Germany in 1933. And so in 1941, he gathered his thoughts in a book called The Dual State. He had tried while he was there to help Jews avoid persecution, but realized he himself had to escape. His book, as you indicate, suggested there are general laws, sometimes called the normative state or the zone of legality or the rule of law, that applies and should apply to vast numbers of people. But then there is the zone of authoritarianism, of government unbound. It's also been called the legal abyss or a state of emergency. This, I think, characterizes where the United States is headed under Trump, unless and until all of these brave lawyers and good judges stand in the way. I mean, Trump's lawyers are telling federal courts that they generally have no jurisdiction over the president's conduct of foreign affairs, the Alien Enemies Act, or core Article II powers to remove foreign alien terrorists, as they call them. They are trying to create a law-free zone. Exactly that zone of authoritarianism that Frankel spoke about. And it's the same theory that held sway in South Africa, Chile, Singapore, China, El Salvador, and Israel today. Because Trump is talking about deporting U.S. citizens. He's done it already with U.S. children. And And this is a porous line. The line between these two zones is not strict, and an authoritarian government constantly moves the goalposts to expand the zone of authoritarianism to sweep up ever-widening groups that have become enemies of the state in the minds of the authoritarians. So I'm very grateful that you highlighted this theoretical background for everything we're talking about and everything that's going on. It's very important for listeners to realize for all his fumbling and mumbling that Trump engages in, he's got lawyers, he's got theorists, Stephen Miller and others behind him and in front of him. He has enablers who are speaking his lies in federal court. And I think we have to understand that, and we have to stand up to it. And that's why the protests we are all engaging in, the resistance we are engaging in, unfortunately, German lawyers and judges weren't able to do that. If we're going to beat back the warning of Nazi Germany, it's held in our hands. Lawsuits and good rulings are necessary but not sufficient. The rest of us, we the people, have to do the work as well.
Yes. And just further to what you were talking about and your answer, again, for last Sunday on Meet the Press, for Trump raising the question, did not know, he said, if it was his job to uphold the Constitution. I mean, the man swore an oath to the Constitution when he was sworn in. I mean, that suggests where his mind is at, does it not?
Well, there's an adage that ignorance of the law is no defense for the common criminal. He lifted his hand. He swore to preserve and protect the Constitution. That oath is in the Constitution. He doesn't get to have an excuse that he doesn't know of it. And it's not going to hold up with any of these judges. And I swear, I hope we get unanimous U.S. Supreme Court decisions on this. So far, they've unanimously said he has to facilitate the return of Garcia. I hope when the cases we've talked about today work their way up to that court, if Roberts cares about his legacy, if any of those judges have any self-respect that they are jurists of the highest court, they will uphold these principles as well.
Court.
Well, Steve Rohde, again, we thank you so much for enlightening us on these critically important topics, and for joining us here again on the Lawyers Guild Show.
In this respect, it's truly my pleasure. We shouldn't have to be going through this, but if we're going through it, it is platforms like yours that are helping to educate and inform the people so that then they can speak up and defend democracy.
Thank you, Steve. And that was a pre-recorded interview we did just yesterday, actually, with Steve Rohde. Wonderful as always, and bringing us up to date on the legal situation in the country. To the Master Control Board Op, how much time do we have left? Just 2 minutes. Well, my friends, I'm afraid that's not a lot of time to do anything other than to urge you again, if you like this station, if you're listening to this station and like what you hear and want to keep hearing it, want your neighbors to be able to keep hearing it. It's an alternative radio station. There's nothing else like it in the country. Oh, we have some other branches, but Pacifica Radio is the only one. We've not taken federal money recently. No public station, for that matter, is going to be getting money. We don't take corporate underwriting for our shows. It's just you. We're in it together. Marie and I are not paid. Most of the programmers on our stations are not paid. Our hardworking people behind the scenes are paid, of course, not enough given all the work that they do. So please support us. 818-985-5735 is the way to do that. 818-985-5735. Pick up the phone. Give us a call. You'll feel better. She'll feel better. That's your way of saying thank you to us. We say thank you to them who call us by saying, well, then we also have some thank you gifts. Maria, remind them of that one book in particular I thought was a particularly nice gift.
Yes, one way that KPFK says thank you is for a pledge of $125 or more. The book by Eric Blanc, it's called We Are the Union, How Worker-to-Worker Organizing is Revitalizing Labor and Winning Big. And it really is inspiring. It's a book that talks about what we talk about here on the Lawyers Guild Show all the time, which is people power and how people can empower one another. So please do check that out. Oh, and it is time to wrap, but that's at kpfk.org.
All right. Until next week at the same time.